Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi. What could not have happened just a couple of years ago has taken place in Istanbul, and that is Turkey sponsoring talks on Syria with Russia, France, and Germany. Turkey has done somewhat of an about-face on Syria since its early very anti-Damascus stance. All four have agreed to fight against terrorism, but what exactly does that mean, as one state's terrorist seems to be another's freedom fighter?
Turkish, Russian, and the French presidents, along with German chancellor, met in Istanbul in a four-way summit on Syria. The leaders discussed the situation on the ground in Syria's Idlib, which is the last region under the control of anti-Damascus groups, and also touched upon the latest developments in northern Syria. In a presser held after the summit, the leaders stressed the importance of the implementation of an immediate ceasefire in Syria and the continuous fight against terrorist organizations. They hoped a Syrian constitutional committee could be formed by the end of the year.
We have called for the process of forming a constitutional committee to be finalized as soon as possible. We hope it is formed by the end of this year.
The Turkish president also emphasized the importance of including Iran in this process and informing it of the results of this summit. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin said all parties agree on the importance of ending the war and reaching a political solution.
While the degree of violence in Syria has been greatly reduced, the elimination of all the radical elements is still an important task. We cannot allow the battle-hardened bandits to carry on with their illicit activities, to create sleeper cells in our countries, recruit supporters, and spread extremist ideology and terror.
The participants also discussed the establishment of a demilitarized zone in Syria's Idlib, as agreed on the 17th of September between Ankara and Moscow.
I think that the participants today were serious in finding a political solution to the Syrian crisis, despite their differences. And it seems that this time some actual actions will be taken. There are a few things that need to be clarified, but I can see that this meeting could be the beginning of a solution in Syria. Of course, we do not expect the crisis to end tomorrow, but the presence of those four leaders and them having common ground is a big step in my opinion.
The Istanbul summit also discussed the issue of the reconstruction of Syria so life can return to normal and the refugees could get back to their homes. Although numerous such summits have been held to find a political solution to the Syrian crisis, it seems none will achieve its goal as long as the Syrian government itself is not a part of it. Rashan Saglam, Press TV, Istanbul.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of London, Mr. Adam Gary, editor and director of Eurasia Future, and out of Richmond, Frederick Peterson, senior congressional defense advisor. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Richmond. And Frederick, what is the significance of this summit and also that it was held in Turkey? Frederick, can you hear me? We seem to be having some technical difficulties out of Richmond. Let me cross over to London and pose the same question to Adam. What do you think is the significance of this summit and also the venue being in Turkey?
Well, indeed, those two things are very related. While the most militarily powerful nation that's playing a central role in the Syria conflict is still Russia, as of course the US is playing a more peripheral but still very sneaky role, Turkey has in the last year become the most important geopolitical and diplomatic player in the Syrian conflict, insofar as few deals can be reached and meaningfully implemented without the agreement of the Turkish president and his government. Russia and Turkey have incidentally, but not coincidentally, become incredibly closer over the last 2 years, and because of that, their opinions, which were once quite different, to say the least, about the conflict in Syria have converged in some very important ways. The only element, frankly, missing from this meeting, which tried to draw the Europeans into this Russo-Turkish consensus, was, of course, Iran. But luckily and thankfully, President Erdogan talked about the Astana process involving his country, Russia, and Iran, and the positive things that that has led to. Indeed, none of the more recent positive developments in terms of de-escalation that we've seen would have been possible without the consecration of the Astana trio of Russia, Turkey, and Iran. Turkey acknowledges this, so did Russia, and the Europeans, while not vocally acknowledging it, they know it too, because after all, it's Germany and France that are standing there embarrassed because they want to trade with Iran, but Donald Trump is bullying them, perhaps successfully, into not doing so.
Well, staying with you, Adam, you talked about the Europeans. What about now the Europeans' role? We're looking at France and Germany, the two entities, European entities that were there at the summit yesterday. How do you see their role now in playing a part to bring everything to an end in Syria?
I see them a bit like the appearance of a lavatory after a long car journey where one is holding oneself in and uncomfortably so for a very long time. This is the case insofar as they're not going to contribute anything new to the wider dialogue, but they are a signpost that the journey is over, that even they, not wanting to be totally left out of a major issue in which they got all their predictions wrong, they now want to be on the winning side, which does revolve around this consensus that Turkey is forming along with Turkey's incredibly important Russian and Iranian partners. So in that sense, the European stamp of approval isn't necessarily going to change anything, but it does represent that the wider orbit is now pulling in these other satellites from what used to be a galaxy a long time ago and in a place far, far away.
Well, Frederick Peterson, hopefully we have you now. Sorry, viewers, about not being able to establish that connection sooner. You're taking all of this and the role you see Turkey playing in order to help solve this crisis in Syria.
Well, we certainly hope that that the movement toward a ceasefire is genuine and is backed up by actual measures on the ground to reduce the terrible toll of civilian casualties and deprivation and refugee crisis that has been created by this terrible, terrible warfare. We should say that talk is, in theory, much better than shoot, unless the period of talk is used to reposition, resupply, reload, and reestablish a battlefield that could be even more deadlier in the future than in the past. We do have some optimism that this war may be winding down, and the terrible cost that it has been paid by innocent civilian blood may be reduced, and that the world pressure, whatever that pressure may be, will influence the parties to actually resolve this matter in a peaceful manner. However, we look at Syria as being the very unfortunate, brutal battleground of ideas, of ideology, of ambition, and of economies seeking to advance their own interests. We certainly hope that as a result of this ostensible ceasefire, that it can proceed to a reasonably peaceful conclusion, and that will be good not only for the sides that are involved there and their militaries, but certainly for the people themselves of Syria that have paid such a terrible price. That I guess the bottom line here is that we will have to wait and see.
Okay.
We will have to wait and see what ensues in the coming days, in the coming weeks, and to give legitimacy to this ceasefire and see that both sides are reaching for a higher end, and that is true peace in the area.
Of course, we're looking specifically at the talks
solid,
that were held,
good principles
the
that
talks
can be
that were held in
sides.
Istanbul, and how effective it
yes.
can or cannot be. Adam,
yes.
now this group has been able to on several issues, and one is the need to fight against terrorists. My question to you is, can Ankara, Moscow, Berlin, and Paris actually agree on who is a terrorist and what is terrorism in order to fight against that?
The short answer is that Ankara and Moscow, and indeed Iran, have already largely agreed, and this was brought to the fore at the end of the recent group of the Astana Triumvirate who met in Tehran, and the subsequent Russo-Turkish meeting a week or so after that. The agreement essentially singles out the al-Nusra Front, sometimes called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which operates in the Idlib governorate, as well as the direct implication that the YPG PKK terror group operating under the auspices of the American military in the Northeast is also a group that will be considered, and rightly so, a terror group. There are, of course, other groups such as what's left of Daesh and other groups loyal to this form of Salafism. As for the Europeans, it's a curious one. They have had a touch-and-go relationship with the various incarnations of the al-Nusra Front, and they've had even more worrying close relationships with the YPG-PKK. So the spirit of goodwill that did appear to exist, in spite of some terminal differences in terminology, is going to be something that will have to reveal itself in the coming weeks and months. It's notable that hours ago, Turkey conducted its first operation east of the River Euphrates, just as President Erdogan promised to do so on Friday. Unless the United States and Turkey can reach some sort of agreement to neutralize the YPG-PKK, then I think that we're going to see more Turkish action there, which is de facto given a green light by the Astana partnership as well. It should be, because these countries have all faced various forms of terrorism in the past. They're contending with it now, so it's only natural that they should reach a common level of understanding over the terror groups that are still operating in Syria.
Well, Frederick, now some of the terrorists used to enter Syria via Turkey, as Ankara at one point in time seemed to be in line with Saudi policy on Syria. That has changed, obviously. And what do you make of this change, and what do you think is behind this change by Turkey?
Well, Turkey is showing a very sharp shift away from heretofore a Western alliance, although they're still members of NATO, and toward Russian interests, toward Iranian interests, and toward what President Erdogan sees as his own larger extraterritorial interests in that region. We should note that one side's freedom fighter is another side's terrorist. One side's terrorist is another side's freedom fighter. And how we define these should be by what actions are being performed on the ground. We spoke of the Kurdish influence there, and they certainly have a cross-border population. They are a valid ethnic minority that has been sorely put upon and is striving to be freedom fighters in their own cause. There is a certain legitimacy to people who are seeking their own independence that should be addressed in good faith by members who oppose them on other grounds. We should not delude ourselves into thinking that this is purely a side of good versus evil. There are many competing interests here: religious, economic, national, extraterritorial ambitions on the parts of some. Many of these in a very complex stew that is now simmering because of a ceasefire, and we hope that it will cool and be able to be separated so that these issues can be freely, fairly and accurately addressed by all sides. And this is
well,
not
well, Frederick,
just two sides.
What we look
it is
at
a very multi-dimensional, multi-ethnic, multi-religious culture.
Okay, Frederick, sorry to interrupt you. When we look at the situation, we look at, for example, Vladimir Putin yesterday, when some of the other leaders at the summit, whenever they were talking about the Syrian government, they continued to talk about the Syrian regime, continually with their negative overtones. I mean, is this positive at all? Is this going to help get us to where we need to go? It is quite obvious, one would think, that the Syrian government and its allies are going to be victorious in Syria. So should these countries not move on from this type of negative rhetoric?
I quite agree with you, actually, that rhetoric can go a long way in exacerbating or in mollifying a conflict between the parties. But behind the rhetoric are passions, and behind the passions are positions that are being asserted by both sides. The rhetoric, yes, I quite agree, can be detrimental to a reasonable, rational conversation. And some of the words that are being thrown around by both sides, we should note, do not contribute to an ultimate end. Ultimately, the question must be asked, what is in the heart, what is in the mind, what is in, consequently, the policies of the various sides here? Are they indeed reaching for peace, or are they yet once again, in another language, in another manner, reaching for hegemony and reaching for predominance of their own positions over their opponents? This is a very complex, as we all know, region. There are many, many competing interests. I quite agree with you. We need to tone down the rhetoric on all sides and tone up the reason to come to a solution that will benefit the people truly in the long run,
all right,
not just benefit the interests of the competing parties.
Okay, well, Adam, with the participation of these countries, stay with me, Frederick.
In that region,
Adam, with the participation of these countries in the summit and the talks that were held, doesn't it show that there is some realization by these countries that the war in Syria has been won by the Syrian government and its allies?
First of all, I'd like to address a more holistic point. If you take up arms and kill to make a political point or to make a religious point or an ideological point, you are a terrorist. And anyone justifying that is whitewashing the crimes of terrorists. I don't care if someone is left or right, one religion or another religion or any other variable. If you use violence to achieve your goals, you are a terrorist. So back to the question, I'd like to think of the situation as more of a win-win. It's clear that the U.S. and Israel, who were the instigators of regime change, lost because regime change in the traditional sense isn't happening. And the U.S. in particular has also lost because it's brought Turkey, Iran, and Russia closer together. It's brought the EU and Turkey back together, mainly for trading purposes. It's highlighted that the EU's stance about Iran, however self-interested it is a fact of life. And it's brought America's favorite country, Israel, closer to the Asian superpower called Russia. So if the law of American regime change is a blood-soaked version of Murphy's Law, what's happened in Syria is the flowering of the law of unintended consequences. And so in this sense, I would hope that once the peace process gets underway, that it won't be phrased in terms of one side won and one side lost, but it ought to be a win-win, but this will be incomplete until the United States relinquishes its support for the YPG-PKK terror organization. That's a very big piece of the puzzle, and since the Idlib agreement, most of the contentious and fraught military aspects of this conflict are indeed in the Northeast. It's not coincidental that what's left of Daesh is trying to mount a comeback in that very region.
Well, let's talk about that. Frederick, Adam just talked about the Idlib agreement. I want to talk about Idlib itself, right? Because though all these countries say that they are against terrorism, I want to look at the perspective of why do you think they do not want the Syrian government to actually finish off these terrorists who, as Adam said, are basically in one part of the country now, and that would be Idlib or that area?
Well, yes, I actually found myself in partial agreement with your other guest, and I think actually there is some commonality in the conversation here among all parties. What we have is, again, I will go back to the statement that I made, that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. There is a moral difference in resistance to tyranny, in opposition to tyranny, using weapons, and that it is not always terrorism. However, there have been, in this theater and around the world, in fact, horrible examples of excess in and the use of a very nice language that is put on a very hideous idea or a very hideous heart of the fighters who choose to reach for what they consider to be perhaps hegemony or a higher standard or whatever their objective is, and yet it is doing terrible damage. There appears to be an end in sight here, and it will be up to the shall we say, the government in Syria right now, Assad and his allies, and the terrorists, the counter-terrorists or whatever they think they are that are fighting them, to find a way to agree. That's what a conference is all about. There has to be a give and take on both sides. Mm. I believe there is an opportunity for that. There is extremely complex area of the world.
It all right, stay with me, Frederick. Stay with me. Only have 30 seconds left. Sorry. Adam, your take on this, yes. the Idlib situation. Okay. How do you see this actually working itself out? Is that agreement going to be able to hold when you have those terrorists now, again, concentrated in one area? Your overall perspective about that?
I have full confidence that the Russian-Turkish cooperation mechanisms are strong enough and transparent enough to minimize any damage that a terrorist would want to inflict against this overall agreement. And I would like to end by saying that no, one man's terrorist is not another man's freedom fighter. All terrorists are evil, and the only good terrorist is one who isn't born. The second best kind is one who is neutralized in the field of battle according to the international law precepts which justify the neutralization of terrorism by legitimate states.
And on that note, thank you very much. Adam Gary, editor and director of Eurasia Future out of London, and Frederick Peterson, senior congressional defense advisor out of Richmond. Appreciate your viewers being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. See you next time.